I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From the Financial Times, this is Hard Currency. Is the market waking up from its sleepy summer slumber? What looked like a decidedly dull FX market got some life this week from several factors. A call from a senior Federal Reserve policymaker for a rethink in Fed strategy, Fed minutes that may or may not point to a September rate hike, the yen going below 100 against the dollar, and a revival in sterling as the first signs of a post-Brexit data showed a certain resilience in the UK economy. So, what do we make of all these factors? Are they fleeting, or do they have some lasting power to them? I'm Roger Blitz, and a warm August welcome to Hard Currency, the weekly podcast of the Financial Times about foreign exchange. And with me in the studio is Kit Jukes, global strategist at Societe Generale. Kit, have you holidayed well?
I've holidayed very well, although, like most British people, I've been holidaying in Europe, suffering from the weakness of the pound, just hoping it goes up enough today for me to get maybe some cheaper euros in.
Okay, well, should we start with the pound? We've had this slew of data this week. We were told that this is the first hard data post-Brexit about the impact of Brexit on the UK economy. Was it really telling us that much?
I think the retail sales numbers this morning on Thursday told us that summer weather and barbecues beat Brexit. Andy Murray won Wimbledon. We were all in a good mood and we'd only just voted in the referendum and it hadn't sunk in yet. So I don't think that tells us anything about what we will do. It tells us that the purchasing managers surveys and any other survey tell us that plans for investment, plans for orders and the outlook is pretty dire. But right now, we're spending money. The employment data showed another fall in unemployment that continues to suggest there was a lot of momentum going into the referendum. But I don't think it tells us anything much about the longer term.
August and sterling is going to hover around this 130 mark. Is there going to be a significant break coming up? And what if so, what's going to trigger it?
I think if anything, we've still got positioning that's short and sentiment that's bearish. And the path of least resistance might be for sterling to be a little bit stronger. I don't know if that's me talking my personal hopes, but you know, I do think that you can continue to gnaw away over the next few days and maybe weeks at the negative sentiment. We're going to have another round of these surveys, which, having fallen so sharply, I mean, maybe they'll bounce. You know, I wouldn't rule that out either.
So should we wait really for the fourth quarter to determine Brexit's impact on the economy? Or?
I think it'll start getting clearer through September, and I think it'll get clearer through October. I think unless we get a really significant fiscal easing in the fourth quarter of this year, I would be stunned if we don't get enough economic weakness coming through September, October, November to start taking it quite a bit lower.
Okay. And the other thing that's going to impact on sterling is the dollar and whether the dollar is likely to push higher. I mean, at the moment, you probably think that the dollar is still pretty range bound.
Yeah. You know, the dollar at the moment is being driven, I think, to a very great degree by Federal Reserve policy. We're getting a lot of messages from them. But I think the overarching message, whether we have or haven't priced enough into the next one or two meetings when they raise rates, is that the pace of rate hikes will be glacial. At any given meeting, the Fed would be put off from raising rates if any one of a number of factors came through: a weak piece of data here, volatile markets there, something going wrong in the world over here, would make them delay. They still think that it's safer to go too late than to go too early. And so I don't think that's changed very much. And it leaves the global investor community looking at the world's bond markets and assets and saying, I want the stuff with the highest possible yield. And that's not dollars right now.
You know, that is favouring an odd mixture of currencies at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd in the sense, so, you know, things like the Brazilian real, which has been doing well, the South African rand, where a small improvement in the political outlook has given a big improvement in the currency. The Russian ruble despite some concerns about geopolitics. And at the other side of it, the Swiss franc and the Japanese yen, typically big exporters of money to the rest of the world who can't find anything interesting to do with their money, both of their currencies are appreciating. So it's sort of an odd mix whether the hardest currencies are doing well and the highest yielding currencies are doing well. Yes.
Do you take much significance about the yen breaking through 100?
I do psychologically. I think if we found an air pocket and got dollar yen moving down sharply, which would take Japanese equity prices lower, I think that could potentially trigger more of a scare in markets. Now, there's a decent correlation between periods of yen strength and periods of weakness in financial markets more generally. So far, that hasn't happened, and dollar yen's, you know, it traded through 100 and then popped its nose back up above it, and we'll see. But if it were to accelerate, and this sense that the Bank of Japan doesn't know what to do about it were to sort of gather hold, then I think that would make me increasingly nervous.
Yes. Bank of Japan will be waiting to see what Janet Yellen says next week at Jackson Hole. Did you think it was significant what John Williams, the president of the San Francisco Fed, said about, in general terms, the weakness of overall Fed strategy and needing to have a rethink about this? Have you heard this before?
Well, you've been beginning to hear things about it. We got it from the St. Louis Fed, who were saying, you know, that they no longer think that there's a stable equilibrium, and so they haven't been publishing a long-term forecast for interest rates. And so I think there's a thinking that goes on that says, well, Taylor rules aren't helping us. Phillips curve isn't helping us. Our sense of what is a neutral policy rate doesn't seem to be so relevant now. So where do we go and how do we set about a framework for policy? And you do get a sense that monetary policy has become all about should we raise rates or cut rates, as opposed to what should the level of interest rates be and what does that mean? So I think there's a debate to be had about monetary policy in that sense.
And you think we should start seeing Jackson Hole becoming quite a significant forum for that debate to take place?
I hope so. It would be great if it were. I mean, Jackson Hole told us where debates have gone. Remember, we had Jackson Hole on the whole risk on, risk off, the effect on global volatility of markets as a big theme 2 years ago. So it's a great talking shop for thinking and for interesting papers coming through. It's quite hard when you get the sense that the Fed doesn't have a clear idea of where the long-term destination is to avoid all of those papers concluding that while we try to work out how the world's really working, we should go pretty slowly on monetary policy.
Well, I was going to ask you whether the Fed can do the two things at once. On the one hand, have this big debate about long-term policy and at the same time try to keep on the same path in the short term.
And I think that's going to be a problem. Remember, it's not just that they're on the same path. It seems to me very clear that in their communication strategy at the moment, they would like to make sure that markets are priced for, braced for, prepared for any rate rises that they deliver. And that in doing so, they have to warn us that we're underpricing the risk of rate rises, be it in September or December, not because we're necessarily underpriced, but because it makes it easier for them to raise rates if we are priced for it, or makes it hard for them to do so if we don't. Now, that kind of interaction between markets or between, you know, the great unwashed, you and me, and the Federal Reserve seems to me slightly messy. Yes. But if that's your communication on one hand, the slightly more serious issue of what is the right level of interest rates and how do you think about that? I don't know how you have those two debates at the same time.
No. And we have a market that at the moment is not pricing in September, although I am reading a couple of voices saying they're mispricing it and they should beware of a September hike. After all, we had a very strong last payrolls data, which actually wasn't factored into the minutes that came out this week. So payrolls is heading the right way, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I mean, September comes back on the cards quite easily if you draw your circumstances. We get another strong payroll number if we got an acceleration in wage growth, and if financial markets continued on this current pretty benign environment, then I'm sure the debate around September could pick up quite a lot. I suppose I'm quite like everybody else in financial markets at the moment. So yes, that's if yes. Kit, and from long experience, I know that the number of ducks that need to be lined up in a row for it to actually happen seems quite a lot.
I've lost my thoughts on what is the Fed's natural inclination. Are they naturally inclined to hike, or are they naturally inclined not to?
I think they're naturally inclined to hike, but very easy to be put off. I think they're a bit, you know, I'm naturally inclined to go on a diet and naturally inclined to give up drinking alcohol for a bit. But it doesn't take much for me to put it off for another day.
So August, the rest of August is going to, certainly going to be different from last August when we had that great shock from China. But what will the rest of August, do you think, be like? One, to get back on the beach and expect things to carry on as normal?
Yeah, there's, you know, I'm concerned about the risk of dollar yen moving sharply lower. I'm concerned, along with everybody else, about an escalation in the situation on the Ukraine-Russian border. I think these are issues we have to keep a fair eye on. But other than that, it does seem to me the most likely environment is that the dollar's quite weak and that money continues to flow into any currency that offers more attractive yields than the major economies.
And the pound's still going to be punishing if you're going abroad to Europe.
It might get a little bit punishing for those taking, you know, late holidays on the grounds we're not getting bad news. And as we don't get bad news, some of the shorts go out. My only fear on that score is that the world's been quite short of euros as well, and it's not impossible that the euro gets a little bit more expensive. So maybe, you know, the United States is the only place that's going to get cheaper for your holidays, I'm afraid.
Excellent. Thank you very much to Kit Jukes, global strategist at SocGen. Please keep up to date with all the FX news on the FT, and have a look at ft.com/markets. Next week, we'll be looking ahead to that Janet Yellen keynote speech at Jackson Hole and how the dollar is warming up to that event. Join us again next week. Goodbye.